This interview was produced for Red Eye, a 3-hour current affairs program on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 102.7 FM. Anne Miles is the author of a short essay called A Memoir of My Welfare Years. In the essay, she talks about her experience living on social assistance and the kind of assumptions people made about her and her children because she was on welfare. Anne is no longer on welfare. She describes herself now as low income. She lives in Gibson's on the Seychelles Peninsula. I spoke with Anne earlier this week, and I began by asking her why she had to turn to welfare in the early 1980s.
My marriage was breaking up. I had a newborn son and a 4-year-old daughter, and this was back in 1983. I very much, especially in terms of my daughter, who was very upset about the breakup, I wanted to be with her, spending time with her. Her father had been home looking after her while I worked, and I didn't want her to go from that to being looked after by a stranger.
You were on welfare in the end for 18 years. What prevented you from getting off earlier?
The lack of full-time living wage jobs, especially the full-time part. I had moved to a smaller community, so of course there were fewer jobs there. But even when my children were in school and I got a $100 grant from welfare to do a job search in the city, and I was willing to commute or move, even then, like that, there was absolutely no response to that. So I think that my taking off a few years to look after my children at home was a big barrier in the employer's minds, maybe. Also, I think the whole job situation had changed. There had been a lot more. I'm sure that the job I was doing just before I went on welfare, I'm sure that got taken over by computers because there was talk of maybe that was going to happen. So I think there were just fewer jobs by the time I looked.
Now, you write that you seldom felt poor. Why not?
Because I was lucky. Because my mother bought a condominium unit and rented it to me for less than the welfare shelter allowance. Because I am thrifty, and that's another thing that I learned from my mother. I know how to stretch food. I know how to shop, and I know how to resist impulse buying. So those were skills that I learned in my upbringing that were very helpful. I, as an adult, did not feel poor, but I think my children felt that they were. By the time they were in high school, it was like there was a stigma if you didn't have name brand clothing. And that was something that even though I went to a high school that was in an affluent area back in the 60s, this name brand clothing thing wasn't happening. And it was like, well, we can't wear anything from the thrift store. We can't wear anything from Sam's. And, of course, they had to. And also, I didn't necessarily have money for extracurricular activities for them.
What kind of thing?
Well, for instance, my son was in Scouts, and I was able to pay for that because of the flat rate earnings exemption. The NDP decided to cut out the flat rate earnings exemption in, I guess it was in 96, when they brought in the BC benefits legislation. And they allowed people to keep 25% 12 months out of 36, but no flat rate. I didn't even get to keep the 25% because I'd already been working for years at this part-time job. So I immediately was allowed to keep no earnings, and therefore my son had to drop out of Scouts.
And were there other situations with your children in school where they couldn't participate in the regular activities that their classmates might have?
Well, my daughter, in about grade 6 or 7, she was going to a school where the principal had field trips that were, you know, like going to a camp for several days and it costing $100 per child, and saying this was part of the curriculum and that anyone who didn't go had to sit in a classroom at the school. And I just don't think that that's right when there are families going to the food bank, that they should be asked for $100 for what is supposed to be free public education.
Now, you describe yourself now as being low income, mm-hmm. in an affluent society. How is that different from being on welfare?
You just feel so much, being off welfare, you just feel so much more relaxed. It was a huge relief to get off welfare because you don't feel like someone's watching you all the time. You don't feel like you have to hide things. You feel like you're a human being again, like you're a normal person again. And I'm not saying that I felt abnormal all the time, but I felt funny, you know, like, and people's comments, maybe they didn't even know I was on welfare, the kinds of comments people would make about people on welfare would make me feel like I wasn't a part of society, and now I feel like I'm part of the community again.
So what kinds of assumptions do people make about people on welfare?
I think they make the assumption that people on welfare are poorly educated. Perhaps they make the assumption that they have alcohol and drug problems, which is sometimes true, but not necessarily. They make the assumption that people on welfare are unskilled, and yet during the 80s recession, I knew teachers who were on welfare hoping for a substitute job to come up in the school so they could get some work. And lots of tradespeople, you know, like the government says there's a skill shortage, but I don't believe that because I know that there are skilled tradespeople who cannot get work.
It always seems to me also that there's a lot of skill involved in managing money to be able to survive on welfare. So I think when you say that people see you as unskilled, I know you're talking about other kinds of skills, but there is also that sort of tremendous survival skill that's involved.
That's right. And I think that's another assumption. When people say they can't live on the little small amount they get on welfare, then the public response is, you just don't know how to budget. Well, some of us could teach them how to budget. They have no idea. As I said, I was lucky because I was renting from my mother, so it was below the shelter allowance, but most people have to pay more than the shelter allowance for their accommodation and then somehow budget that small amount of money that's left over to cover food and clothing and other necessities.
What kind of day-to-day decisions about money as a low-income person do you make that people with more money don't even think about, aren't even aware about having to make?
Well, I definitely have my calculator when I'm in the supermarket, and I tend to buy the cheaper cuts of meat. I tend to make a lot of soups and stews and that sort of thing, bean dishes, rather than what somebody who had more money might make. I never throw anything away. It's a very rare time that something goes bad in my fridge and I have to throw it away. I make sure that all that food gets eaten.
As a low-income person, do you still encounter misunderstandings about what life is like to live as a low-income people in an affluent society?
Oh, let me think. Have I run into that sort of thing lately? I think a little bit. Like, when I got off welfare, it was because I got a modest inheritance, and a friend immediately said, why don't you buy a car? And she didn't understand that it's not just buying a car, but that a car is a constant expense, the insurance and the gas and everything, if it needs any repairs, and that this would be like taking on another dependent for someone like me. It wouldn't just be, okay, you have some money now, so buy a car. It would be a continuing expense. Since I've been off welfare and since my children grew up and no longer live with me, I find that there are fewer misunderstandings about my low-income status, just because there's fewer things that I bump into, like such as not being able to pay for scouts, not being able to pay for the school field trips.
What one thing would you like to convey to people about your experience as being someone who lives with less money in a very rich society? The one thing that you wish that people understood?
I guess I wish that people understood that having less money doesn't make you less of a good parent or less of a good citizen. There's almost a feeling that the more money you make in this society, the more worthy you are. And these are the same people that know that rich people aren't perfect, but still there's almost an unconscious response that somebody that has money is a solid citizen. And that's not necessarily true, and it's not necessarily true that a poor person isn't.
I spoke with Anne Miles earlier this week. You can read her essay on the website of the Fulcrum Project. Go to fulcrumproject.org and click on Stories. Red Eye is produced by an independent media collective and airs on Vancouver Cooperative Radio. You can hear the program from 9 until noon Pacific Time, streaming live at cooperadio.org.